Well, folks, there's some studies out. They're preliminary. They're new about whether or not these GLP-1 drugs may help reshape some of their patients' brains. Well, it caught my attention because there's a couple of things I would like to reshape in my brain. Dr. Gil Hebert is here to talk to us about it, assistant professor of medicine at Tulane University. It looks like, Doc, some of this reshaping is actually a positive thing.
Yeah, Joel, nice to chat with you. I think this is something that from obesity medicine and the study of metabolism and weight regulation in the brain could be expected. But obviously, like you said, there's a little more research needed to understand the full extent of this.
So what did these early onset studies, what did they reveal specifically?
So I think, we understand the pathophysiology of appetite dysregulation as it contributes to obesity and the areas of the brain that are affected. And, this study in particular, what they're really looking at is, it's a small study, but placing people, teens and adolescents on these medications for other reasons, for metabolic reasons. Are they seeing changes on MRIs that correlate with certain areas of the brain that are in charge of regulating, attention, maybe mood, impulse control, that kind of stuff?
Are you surprised by this connection or not so much?
I mean, not so much. I think, like I said, I think the specifics of it. Maybe there's a little more to shine some light on, but I tell patients this every day. Obesity as a disease is incredibly complex, and it's not one thing that is happening to a person that contributes to their obesity. The same way many other chronic diseases, there's not one thing typically. So to speak of it in these isolations would be tough. But what I see in a lot of patients who use these medications to treat their diabetes or treat their obstructive sleep apnea or treat their obesity, is they report, other effects from the medicine, which include they go, wow, I just, the choices I'm making in my life are a little bit different. I've always wanted to make healthier choices, and now it doesn't seem like that's so difficult. Their attention is a little bit different. Their focus may be a little bit different. So I'm not totally surprised.
When we talk about obesity in general, I'm kind of, and this is going to sound like a weird question, but on a scale to 1 to 10, 10 being, a lot, how much do we actually know physiologically how obesity affects the body in its totality?
I would say we know quite a lot, not quite a 10. I don't think we're perfect yet. But we're certainly, I would think, above a 6 or a 7, venturing onto an 8. We understand the effects of obesity, and we understand both in the brain and in the body. So I always tell patients, we understand the neurohormonal consequences, and we understand some of the physiologic consequences, what your brain and your body are doing. The question that we're getting into is, can we target therapies more and more directed at specific organ systems instead of taking more of a 30,000 foot approach to the problem? And that's where I think a lot of the clinical research is pushing toward.
And is that accomplished also by prescribing different types of drugs at the same time as well?
Sometimes. So I think we say this a lot in obesity medicine. The approach is not a one size fits all. It should be tailored to the patient sitting in front of us. There's lots of considerations of like, what other medications are these people on? Are there medications that we know are what we call obesogenic? They can promote weight gain. Are there issues there? Are there kind of you know, psychosocial issues? Are there behavioral issues involved, and just other health consequences? Are there other medical problems that contribute to their weight gain? And so sometimes we're talking about changing, you know, a class of medication that they're on to treat a different problem, that we go, oh, this actually can assist a little bit with weight loss. It may not be as effective as some of these second generation anti-obesity medicines. But we do use kind of combinations of different therapies and kind of moving some things around to see if we can tailor the treatment to the patient.
Doc, if you would, for the benefit of the listening audience, you know, we talk about GLP-1 drugs. A lot of folks are asking, what are those? You know, what are they by name? So I guess Ozempic would be one, maybe Wegovy. Are there others?
Yeah, there are. There's a handful now. There are some still older versions that have been around for a little over 20 years now. They've, you know, fallen out of favor a little bit, but many people may not have realized they've been on these. So some of them, you know, there are medication names and brand names. So exenatide, liraglutide, dulaglutide, these are things like Saxenda and Victoza that have been around in the diabetes world, like I said, for about 20 plus years. And when I think of GLP-1 classes of medicines, really they're all fall under sort of a peptide class, or that's what they are, to say that the way that insulin in our body is a peptide. But there is the diabetes forms or the FDA indications for diabetes and those that are indicated for weight management or other secondary benefits. So that's things like Ozempic is a diabetes medication, Mounjaro is a diabetes medication, and those drugs are also Wegovy and Zepbound. And there's a slightly newer medication that is a small molecule GLP called Foundayo or Orforglipron.
Are there significant differences between those brands?
So they all sort of fall under the same class of medication. And there are differences in the sense of what were the drugs studied for, maybe as secondary benefits, which a lot of times that's how these medications are covered. And when we compare them, so for instance, semaglutide, which is the drug ingredient that is in Ozempic and Wegovy, is a GLP-1 only medication, whereas Mounjaro and Zepbound, which is tirzepatide is the actual name of the medicine, that's a dual receptor GLP-GIP medication. So it's not two medications put together. It's actually a different peptide that's been formulated. So they have slight differences, but overall have similar effects.
Yeah. And so I guess these studies that we're talking about, I guess it's hard to just generalize then across the GLP-1s about this secondary benefits that people may be having from, because I guess it would be more unique to each individual brand, maybe?
It might be. I kind of tell patients, you know, it's a lot of the effects that we know from these medications, a lot of it's probably class specific because they're still, you know, acting on the same, on similar receptors in similar parts of the body. And it's probably more of an effect size for some people. And we know that people are just biologically diverse. So you have patients who go, look, I tried this and it really gave me none of the effect that other people mention. And we might try a different medication that's in the same class. And they go, oh, wow, nope. This is the one. This works so much better. And that's something that we don't understand yet. We don't have that crystal ball or that test to give them before and go, oh, we know this is the medication that'll work best for you.
Is there, folks are asking, is there a difference in the administration and the effects based on gender?
So there's actually some interesting data around this. So method of administration is really either injection, subcutaneous injection with a very small needle, or there are oral options available. For the closest comparison would be the Wegovy injection versus the Wegovy tablet. And in the trial data, we saw that they were pretty much the exact same outcomes. You know, it's a, probably more of a question of adherence in the real world of do people miss doses or not, because it is a daily pill compared to a weekly injection. And then there's some interesting data around comparing men and women, and actually, on average, women seem to respond better to the medications overall. Now, is it, you know, statistically and clinically significant? Maybe not so much, but you know, a lot of times we do have issues where things are studied, you know, much more in men than in women. But in fact, for these types of medications, more of the data is coming from women.
And is that just, you know, I find my wife is more, you know, when it comes to medication, she's a lot better at strict adherence than I am.
Sure. You know, so. I won't single anybody out, but I think anecdotally we would say that may be true in the medical industry as well. Women are typically maybe a little bit better patients.
Yeah. Doc, final thoughts?
You know, I will say this. I deal with these medications almost every day of the week. And I say this over and over again. We're going to continue to learn more and more about them. And I think if somebody qualifies for them, you know, seek the advice of your doctor. And if need be, try to get out there and see a specialist who really understands these medications and can help treat the diseases that they're intended to treat.
Forgive me, I wanted to ask one more question that just kind of popped into my head. You know, this is a relatively, I guess, for the most part, a new drug that's been on, you know, it's been on the market a little bit, but it's relatively new. How would you characterize the impact of this on society? I mean, obesity's been growing in this country for, you know, decades. And when you think about the secondary and you know, and other levels mm-hmm. of impact that this has led to in the administration of these drugs, I mean, how would you characterize the impact to society?
I mean, I think this is going to be a turning point in a bit of medical world history. Now, that's my bias. I think you know, we're very lucky to kind of come up in this time where we have the ability to legitimately treat patients who are struggling with obesity, and many of them for their entire lives. And related to these medications, we actually, for the first time, really have effective medications to treat monogenic causes of obesity. You know, that's a totally different battle. And even these medications don't really affect that so much. And so we finally have other things. And so I think if I were to fast forward 10 years, I think similar to things like statins and antihypertensives and stuff, the stigma around these medications will fall to the wayside, and we will be much more accepting in using these much more broadly. And there's going to be more of them on the market, more refined targeted treatments. And it'll just be another tool in the toolbox for us to treat chronic disease.
You know, the skeptic side of me and the optimistic side of me, you know, these competing forces, as, you know, the acuity levels of certain ailments or illnesses that people have tied to obesity goes away. I mean, that kind of hurts the pharmaceutical industry in one way. And then the other thing is that, you know, we're just a healthier population as a result of all of this. And I mean, it's just you think about it in that respect, and it's huge. I mean, when we look at the amount of the population that's medically uninsured in this country, not able to deal with a bunch of these issues, as the cost of these drugs come down, I mean, the impact mm-hmm. just will exponentially grow, right?
I think so. And I think it's something where when we're talking about sort of the economics of health, It's really hard to look at something and go, well, what happens in the next few months or the next quarter or the next year? It's really, what are we doing now? What interventions are we going to put in place so that, like you said, we have a healthier population in 10, 20, 30 years where we have people who they're living longer, but we want them to live longer with fewer ailments. We want them to be, you know, contributing members of society and able to enjoy themselves. And I think this is, again, just one of those steps in that direction. And the cost is something that'll be there, but it'll come down, I think, as more and more pharmaceutical companies get involved in this. And trust me, there are a lot of interest in this. And so almost every major pharmaceutical company is investing in expanding the options here.
Absolutely. Getting older is a struggle that nobody wants to have, as I attempted to get out of a beach chair the other day and was embarrassed by the attempt. It was horrible. But Dr. Gil Hebert, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate your time, your insight. Assistant Professor of Medicine at Tulane University. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.